Some crimes are never forgotten. Others are lost to history. Those are the ones we focus on in Crimes of the Centuries, a history meets true crime podcast revisiting murders, trials, and frauds that once dominated headlines. I'm Amber Hunt, your host and a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist. If you like true crime that feels both cinematic and historical, find Crimes of the Centuries wherever you get your podcasts.
Live on air, presented by Jer Sweeney.
Good evening and welcome to another edition of Live on Air. Nice to be with you on this Monday evening. I do hope you've had a good week since we last spoke. And the next hour hopefully will be entertaining. It'll be a little bit informative and sure, we'll have a bit of fun. That's the most important thing. What do I have coming up on the programme today? Well, Manus Walsh is a very well-known and well-respected artist. He has been in and around the Burren in County Clare for the past 40 years, even though he's from Dublin himself. But he spends quite a lot of time in Spain, and the people of Malaga particularly would be very fond and very well versed in the work that Manus Walsh does. He opened a brand new exhibition in Galway over the weekend, and I was there, and we'll be telling you about that and talking to Manus as well. Now, Marianne Dwyer is a lady who is just about to launch her first novel this coming Thursday. There's been a lot about books over the last few weeks, but you see, this time of the year there are a lot of books being launched, so Marianne will be talking to us about her book, which she titled How to Trap a Starfish. She's also a very accomplished singer. I'll be talking to her about the album she released back in 2016 as well. Peter O'Dwyer will be joining us to talk to us about Brexit and Ireland. And if you've been watching the news of late, you will know that things are at a very, very delicate stage at the moment. And we lost one of the musical geniuses during the week as well. A tribute to Micheál Ósuluwon on the programme this evening as well. I'll be telling you about some events coming up in the area that you might be interested in. But I've got bigger news than that. I want you to pay attention, please, because the email address that I normally give you at the start of the programme is changing or has changed. If you would like to get in touch with the programme from now on, the address is ger@tre.radio. All right, ger@tre.radio is the new email address that I would like you to use. I'll be looking at some famous birthdays throughout the programme as well and playing some music from people that we will be marking their birthdays this week. Now, Micheál Ósuluwon, Professor Dr. Michael O'Sullivan, Micheál Ósuluwon, he sadly passed away, and he was a giant in the world of music, academia. He was just very well liked, very well loved, a very talented person. Now, if you're into the hard news and you're living here in Spain, you might be watching it on RTE or listening to it on RTE for the hard, hard news. So you will have a fairly good handle on what tributes have been paid to Micheál Ósuluwon over the last number of days. I was back in Ireland last week, and I happened to be doing some work at my old radio station, Clare FM. And I thought it would be nice for you to hear how a local radio station, such as Clare FM, paid tribute to a man that had very significant ties to County Clare. In fact, his mass, his requiem mass, was held in Kilrush this morning. It was significant that Clare FM would mark his passing. And this is how the radio station marked his passing at the 1 o'clock news on the day he died.
Tributes are pouring in for renowned musician and composer Micheál Ósuluwon, who's died at the age of 67. The Clonmel native passed away last night at Milford Hospice in Limerick. He's survived by his wife, Professor Helen Phelan, his sons and family. Clare FM's Fiona McGarry has this report.
Born in Clonmel, County Tipperary, Micheál Ósuluwon was one of Ireland's best-known musicians, composers and academics. He was Emeritus Professor of Music at the University of Limerick and founder and director at the Irish World Academy of Music and Dance, which he created in 1994. He also recorded a series of pioneering solo albums which repositioned his chosen instrument, the piano, at the heart of Irish traditional music. Curraghfinn native and academic Dr. Tim Collins says he was one of the great cultural figures of modern times.
First and foremost, of course, he's an artist, an exquisite one at that. He was a man who I would see single-handedly reposition the piano in Irish traditional music from that of being just an instrument of accompaniment to actually an instrument in its own right. Some of his most beautiful recordings, Dolphin's Way, really were groundbreaking in their day, and to this day still influencing piano players throughout the world.
President Michael D. Higgins says Mihalo Suluwan's music and outstanding work will forever be enjoyed by countless people, celebrating his humour, his fearless sense of exploration and his talent for harmony, joy and mobilising the peerless power of music. He's described him as a representative of what Irishness is at its best, leaving us with an indelible legacy both through his music and through the academy, which he led for over two decades. Fecal fiddle player Martin Hayes says the Irish World Academy of Music and Dance will be his legacy.
He decided to build an institution around the way in which we do Irish music and the way in which we approach that. So it's an institution that's friendly to the practices of traditional music and embraces how we approach that music and how we play.
Mihalo Suluwan also had a special connection with Clare FM, composing some of the station's key musical themes, including On a Clare Day 29 years ago, as well as the recent award-winning FLA coverage. He's also featured in My Own Words, a programme here on Clare FM.
Well, we're at the end of our time here now. I've really enjoyed talking with you. I hope you enjoyed some of the music that I played. I want to go out on a favourite track of mine called Flowin. This piece, Flowin, is part of the soundtrack of the silent movie, music I composed for Irish Destiny. And with it, I'm saying goodbye to you as I flow off the air. Slán agus beannacht.
As I said, that was from the Clare FM news broadcast during the week when the news of Mihal Suluwan's passing came through. I have a little Mihal story as well. When we started back in 1989 on that radio station, Clare FM, there was no technology that allowed us to do things overnight, to play music or to repeat programmes or anything like that. So there was dead air, as we call it, silence, between about 1 o'clock in the morning and 7 o'clock when I used to start and do the breakfast. And before we started at all, I said, look, you know, you can't just, you know, open things up at 7 o'clock with the news jingle and have straight into hard news. We decided that we'd play a piece of music, and the piece of music that we chose to open the radio station every morning at 7:05 was a Mihalo Suluwan piece, and it's called The Fox Chase. And I'm going to play it for you right now in memory of Mihalo Suluwan, who passed away last week. That's lovely. And it does bring back memories from 1989, 1990, 1991, all those years ago. That is the late Mihal Osuluwon, Fioch an Madra Rua, the Fox Chase. And as we say back home, Erd Yeshde, Goreva Anam. We are going to take a little break right now. Come back to me just after that.
Ger Sweeney presenting Live on Era.
Welcome back to the programme. Every so often we take a listen back to a memory from the Eurovision Song Contest, one of the Irish entries. And we started at the start when we started doing it back about 1965, and we've done a year every so often. And I'm going to do another one for you right now from 1978. That's where we are up to. Now, if you were in the UK at any stage and you went along to the West End and went to see Les Miserables, particularly, you will know the gentleman that represented Ireland in 1978. It was the 23rd edition of the Eurovision Song Contest, and it was held on the 22nd of April that year. The winner turned out to be Israel with a song called Abanabi, which was sung by Isaac Cohen and Alphabeta. Now, there were 20 participants that year in the Eurovision Song Contest, and Ireland sent a gentleman by the name of Colm C.T. Wilkinson. Ah, I remember it well. He sang a song called Born to Sing. It came fifth that year with 86 points, and we're going to take a listen to it right now. The Irish entry to the Eurovision Song Contest 1978, Colm C.T. Wilkinson on Live on Era, the Irish programme on Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain.
I said it would never work, you said let us try. I said I'm a travelling man and I'll only make you cry. And when the feeling hit me and I had to move along, you said you were right, I guess you must sing your song. And a man is born to do one thing, and I was born to sing. And I must take the good times and the bad times that it brings. And I miss you in the morning, but most of all at night. And I couldn't stop refusing, though I tried with all my might. I lie in bed and watch shadows moving on the wall, and the loneliness is killing me, so I turn the radio on. And I need you now and want you in the slow morning light, and the music makes it easier, but it doesn't make it right. And a man is born to do one thing, and I was born to sing. And I must take the good times and the bad times that it brings. And I missed you in the morning, but most of all, understand why I live this way. Songs keep moving in my head, there's music I must play. So I pack my bags and once again I get out on the road. Another day, maybe tonight, I might catch my soul. And a man is born to do one thing, and I was born to sing. And I must take the good times and the bad times that it brings. And I miss you every most of all the night, and I couldn't stop the music, though I tried with all my might. And a man is born to do one thing, and I was born to sing. And I must take the good times and the bad times that it brings. And I missed you in the morning, but most of all the night, and I couldn't stop the music.
Go. 1978 was the year Colm C.T. Wilkinson represented Ireland in the Eurovision Song Contest with that song, Born to Sing, and came fifth out of 20 that year. So there we go. Now, I did mention at the beginning of the programme, and indeed I promoted over the last couple of days as well, that I would be talking to Manus Walsh, because Manus launched a brand new exhibition in Galway over the weekend, and I was there, and I was due to have a quick telephone conversation with him this evening on the programme. However, I have just been notified, due to circumstances beyond his control, he is unable to do the interview this evening, but has promised me that we can talk next week on the programme. So I certainly look forward to that, chatting to Manus Walsh. So that gives me an opportunity to play this fabulous song.
Write me a letter and send it home. Write me a letter and send it home. 'Cause I've been waiting for your touch, and I know I've been asking way too much. So write me a letter and send it home. No one calls me up since you've been gone. No one calls me up since you've been gone. Now I'm feeling so alone, 'cause I've been looking at the world through my telephone. So write me a letter and send it home. Easy on your bad dreams, baby. Don't let your heart go crazy. You're still my lovely one. Write me a letter and send it home. Write me a letter and send it home. 'Cause my ears are fading and my head's playing tricks, and my conscience fading as the clock it ticks. So write me a letter and send it home. On your bad dreams, baby. Don't let your heart go crazy. You're still my lovely one. Bright eyes, know you must be so tired. Just lay your head by my side. You're still my lovely one. Let your heart go crazy. You're still my lovely one. Bright eyes, I know you must be so tired. Just lay your head by my side. You're still my lovely one.
Music of a group called The Fiddle Case, and you put those four lads together, Owen O'Neill, Adam Shapiro, Kieran O'Connell and John O'Connell, and you get the wonderful sound that you have just heard. Other people that featured on the album includes Luca Bloom, Dave Shapiro, Dara McGlynn is in there, and Leila Schmitz. So there you have it. The name of the album is Write Me a Letter. And thank you very much to Owen O'Neill for giving me a copy of that when I was back in Ireland last week, and you will hear more from that on the programme, I promise you. Right now, we're going to take a quick break. Come back to me just after that. I will be telling you about some famous Irish birthdays, playing some significant music for that, and we'll be talking to Peter O'Dwyer about Brexit and Ireland.
Ger Sweeney presenting Live on Era.
Welcome back to the programme. We like to mark significant birthdays throughout the weeks on the programme. But by the way, if there's some birthday coming up in your world that you would like us to mark, please do let me know. You can email on the brand new email address, ger@tre.radio, anytime you like. Today, the 12th of November, we celebrate the birthday of John McGahern, who was a writer born in County Leitrim on this day back in 1934. We skip to Wednesday, the 14th of November. If you remember the Commitments movie, in fact, I think I played a track from the Commitments from that movie. a number of weeks ago. Andrew Strong, who was the lead singer in that particular one, was born in Dublin in 1973, so he's 45 on this coming Wednesday. Mick Maloney, musician from Limerick, travelled off to the States, became a part of the well-known Johnsons group and the Emmett Spiceland. He was born in Limerick 74 years ago on Thursday, back in 1944 on the 15th of November. And Saturday of this coming weekend, we mark the birthday of Brian Lenehan Sr., who was born in Dundalk in 1930. And Luke Kelly was born in Dublin in 1940. So we celebrate Luke Kelly's birthday by playing this wonderful track from him.
See the child with the golden hair but eyes that show the emptiness inside. Do we know, can we understand just how he feels, or have we really tried? See him now as he stands alone and watches children play a children's game. Simple child, he looks almost like the others, yet they know he's not the same. Scorn not his simplicity, but rather try to love him all the more. Scorn not his simplicity, oh no, oh no. See him stare, not recognizing that kind face that only yesterday he loved. The loving face of a mother who can't understand what she's been guilty of. How she cried tears of happiness the day the doctor told her it's a boy. Now she cries tears of helplessness and thinks of all the things he can't enjoy. Scorn not his simplicity, but rather try to love him all the more. Scorn not his simplicity, oh no, oh no. Only he knows how to face the future, hopefully surrounded by despair. He won't ask for your pity or your sympathy, but surely you should care. Scorn not his simplicity, but rather try to love him all the more. Or not his simplicity, oh no, oh no, oh no.
A beautiful song from Luke Kelly called Scorn Not His Simplicity. Absolutely gorgeous song. Now, you may remember a number of months ago, I told you I was sitting in the sunshine sipping coffee with a man by the name of John Lowe, and we spoke to John. John is from the UK originally but moved to Ireland and set up a hugely successful business in Dublin. And he was telling us on the time that I spoke to him that he was going to be back in Spain this time of the year for the 50 Plus Expo, which is his particular gig. His company organises that, and it's something that's been running for a number of years. It's happening at the Hotel IPV Palace in Fuengirola. It's happening next Saturday the 17th and Sunday the 18th. You will have heard ads running on Talk Radio Europe for that. And indeed, you would have heard Roger Comiskey on Saturday morning talking to Giles Brown about it as well. There's free admission. Just want to let you know what's happening. You've got an art tuition session with the same Roger Comiskey. Cooking demonstrations. There's free antique valuations with Eric Knowles from the Antiques Roadshow. There's free blood pressure and blood glucose testing, modern dance classes, and a whole lot more. I just wanted to give it a mention and to wish John Lowe and the crew at the 50 Plus Expo, wish you well with that one. Now, it's been a very intense few days and we're well versed in what's happening on the UK side of the Brexit negotiations with the EU. We like to talk to Peter O'Dwyer from the Times Ireland on a weekly basis and find out what's happening in relation to Ireland exclusively. Peter joins us again this evening. Peter, good to talk to you and thank you for joining us.
Thanks, sir.
Now, Peter, this time of the year is a very important time for letters, but they usually go into the North Pole to Santa Claus. But the DUP received a letter last week and there's been a lot of talk about it. So could you just quickly just maybe recap on what exactly it was and what it meant and maybe some of the reaction from Ireland?
Yeah, sure. So there was certainly no festive joy in the DUP ranks when they got this particular letter. Theresa May sent a letter to Arlene Foster and Nigel Dodd, the leader and deputy leader, respectively, of the DUP. And the Times reported on the details of that letter, which was leaked to us late last week. It essentially told Arlene Foster that May was preparing to include the Northern Ireland-specific backstop, which she had signed up to in December and again in March, in the final withdrawal agreement. It said that there would be checks on goods entering Northern Ireland and that essentially if a UK-wide deal fell apart or couldn't be reached to avoid a hard border, that the border would be put down the Irish Sea. So this, I suppose, is what we've been expecting since last December when this was signed up to, but we've had obviously months and months and months of humming and hawing. So we've finally come to this point where it appears that she has taken the decision that she has to go ahead with what she agreed to and whatever the reaction of the DUP, let it be. Now, the DUP's reaction was much as you would expect, which was to say that May was breaking her word, because also in that December agreement, she had signed up to the DUP's red line that they wouldn't be hived off from the UK in any way, that there'd be no difference. So to the DUP, this means that she's breaking her word. She said she breached the promise that she had set out back in December, and they described it as completely unacceptable. Then Arlene Foster on Friday essentially threw down the gauntlet to the Prime Minister and said, if that deal that you've outlined in your letter comes before Parliament, we won't be backing it. And she said, essentially, the Prime Minister had to go in, do the maths and work out if she could get a deal through without their support, which she can't. So we're essentially at loggerheads again. But Theresa May does seem to be moving towards siding with the idea of the Northern Ireland specific backstop having to be in the withdrawal agreement.
Now, in relation to Ireland, then, I know that the day before this letter was sent and leaked to your colleagues, there was a tweet from Simon Coveney that kind of suggested there was something coming in the next day or so. So there was obviously some bit of knowledge that things were happening. So what did the Irish politicians have to say in the last couple of days?
As you said, early last week, there was some broadly positive noises coming from the likes of Simon Coveney and Leo Varadkar about the potential for a deal to be done, if not in the coming days, then at least in a week or so. That essentially has been dashed, I suppose, by the DUP's opposition to what has been outlined by Theresa May. So we're kind of set back a little bit. They've said very little because I suppose what is outlined in her letter is essentially what the government has been, the Irish government, has been insisting that she keep her word on. So this is what they want, essentially. But they're quite wary, obviously, of the issue with the DUP. So Simon Coveney just said, you know, that same old thing, really, that any deal that came before them, they'd be willing to take a look at and they'd be reasonable about it. He did warn that any deal must be acceptable to Brussels. So I suppose that was just keeping up the pressure of not to let the DUP knock you back from this route that you've set out. And he said, I suppose it was another warning shot. He said that people seem to make the same mistake over and over again in assuming that if the British cabinet agrees something, then
presto,
everything is agreed.
Yeah.
He was making the point that Brussels obviously has to sign.
Just a question for you in relation to Leo Varadkar. You did say that he didn't say a whole lot, but he has come under fire this week because he had a telephone call with Theresa May, and Sinn Féin, particularly in Ireland, were trying to, when he agreed to look at or review the backstop, he was being accused, wasn't he, of giving in to Theresa May in relation to that.
he agreed in that phone call to set up a review mechanism for the backstop. Now, the government's argument is that really a review mechanism makes no difference because it's going to require both sides to sign off on it. So if this review makes it more palatable for the DUP or for anybody else to get on board with a deal, then they're happy enough to say, fine, we can have a review. But, you know, the review is going to work both ways. It's going to require both parties to sign off on it.
Right.
So, like, the government's argument is that it's quite harmless, really. It's just a measure to try and placate some people who are opposed to the proposed deal. But, yeah, some of his Sinn Féin and Fianna Fáil accused him of backsliding a little bit from the agreement. It was seen in some quarters as weakening what had been agreed. You know, this quote that he came out with in December when this deal was first done, that it was bulletproof, that has been thrown back in his face time and time and time again, as we've had all these different travails, and was thrown back in his face again, and people were saying that this review had weakened it. In practice, it probably doesn't, because it needs both sides to sign off on it.
All right, so that's pretty much where we are, and you'd never know. The next couple of days, Theresa May is back in with her cabinet tomorrow, Tuesday.
Yes, tomorrow, Tuesday, she is going to outline the deal that she intends to put before the EU. So we'll see, no doubt after that, some people will not be happy within her cabinet, as always tends to be the case. So I'm sure there'll be some more fallout in the coming days on it.
All right. Peter O'Dwyer is the senior business reporter with The Times Ireland. Peter, thanks as always for joining us. I look forward to chatting to you next week.
Thanks, sir.
Live on air, presented by Ger Sweeney.
I was contacted recently during one of the programmes by a good friend of mine from County Clare, a man by the name of PJ Curtis. And PJ would be renowned right across the world for his literary skills, for his musical skills, and indeed for the fabulous ear that he has. He has produced so many albums for so many different people down through the years. And I said to PJ, if there's somebody you think I should be chatting to, will you let me know? And he said, I have the very girl for you, a girl by the name of Marianne Dwyer. And I said, right, so Marianne joins me on the phone. Marianne, thank you for joining me.
Oh, thanks for having me, Jer. Thanks for having me.
Not at all. And PJ said that he did some work with you on an album, and you have also recently written a book. So firstly, let's talk about yourself and PJ and how you got to know each other.
I actually got to know him via my husband, because he's a bit of an interest in aviation. It wasn't musically related at all.
Right.
My husband is a commercial pilot. We met when I married my husband, and we you know, had the proverbial sing-song at a party prior to the wedding. And he said to me, Marianne, you know, you should do a bit of singing. He got me into the studio. He gave us a gift of a studio recording. In we went into Martin O'Malley in Malby Studios there.
Lovely.
And we started, you know, recording a few songs. And from there, we eventually went on to record an album. It took years now. I was writing at the same time. He said, no, we got to finish this off. What can I say? The album grew, the relationship grew. I continued my writing, actually, more so than my singing. And he's kind of mentored me. I've been very lucky, actually.
Yeah.
I've had some great mentors in my life, people who say it's not about anything else except, you know, telling a story. He's a storyteller, really, in so many ways. He gets a story told. He's always trying to encourage. He's always updating me about people and places. And
yeah, he's great for that, yeah.
He really is. You know, you'd know that, of course.
Now, we'll talk about the album and we'll talk about the book in just a minute. But first, tell me about Marianne Dwyer.
I'm one of seven children. I'm a dub, and I'm awfully sorry about that.
I don't think you're one bit sorry, because you carry that accent so proudly.
Well, I do. And you know something, when you're in Ireland, that really makes a difference. When you're in sort of England, you know, you become one of the Irish.
That's
when you're in Spain, you become one of the Irish. So, you know, at the end of the day, you know, I'm an Irish girl, but I am a dub. One of seven, five girls, two boys. And, you know, from a bit of a bohemian family, really, I was raised very close to O'Donoghue's pub. It was a very sort of late 60s, early 70s, the Dandelion Market. It was a great time, really.
Yeah.
You know? And I have to say, I only realised subsequently when I grew up that there was more influencing me than I realised, you
right.
know.
Yeah.
But everybody had a song to sing. Everybody had a song at a party. I suppose growing up, I realised, I suppose they would call it being dramatic. I had a tendency when I got, particularly if I got upset, to write something down. And that sort of continued, you know, if I felt sort of moved or, as they say, compelled, I start writing. So that was it. You know, I did a little bit of nurse training. became an air hostess for a little while. I've three marvellous children. You know, just life.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm now, I'm afraid, a middle-aged lassie, a lassess of 52, and have just tackled a lifelong ambition, which was to write my first novel. So that's what's happening at the moment.
Now, you're living in County Donegal, am I correct?
Living in County Donegal, still doing a wee bit of travel. Donegal is, well, first of all, I don't know whether you know the county at all, but we're living near a beach called Rosnaula Beach.
Which is beautiful. I've been on it many times.
Glorious. It's a glorious place. My husband's mother was from Ballyshannon, so just a little shout out to the Ballyshannon people. They're absolutely great. I mean, they're everybody is nice in Donegal. It's just, you know, they're soft-spoken, they're nice, they're kind, you know. There was two places we always thought we'd love to retire to, and that they would be Galway and Donegal, and Donegal just came up, you know, we found a lovely place. So we're more or less hoping to retire there and be full-time there now, please God, in the next few years.
And it's a great place to be inspired. It's a great place for artists to go and to write and to listen to and play music. So has that been a part of your writing and your music?
Oh, absolutely. Again, so many great influences in Donegal. But as far as the vista is concerned, you couldn't really get any better than County Donegal, you know, to kind of lose yourself. And to, I mean, I do a lot of my writing just looking out over the sea, you know. It is a real privilege, isn't it, really?
Now, the album, you released it in 2016. You said it was a long time coming, but it's called Stolen Hearts. Tell us about Stolen Hearts.
I know, I must be coming across as a particularly miserable person with all this drama and Stolen Hearts and, you know. A couple of the tunes I've written, and there's a lot of covers in there, but basically Stolen Hearts, I deal a lot in my writing with sort of loss and love. Each and every song, whether covered or not, is really dedicated to a time in my life. But physically the album came about, it became a social thing for us to do. We were travelling at the time, myself and my husband, and we would come back and we'd meet with PJ. I mean, I still miss it. We'd go to County Clare and meet with all these fabulous musicians that PJ would line up, you know. Right. I was encouraged, really, to, you know, put them all together, really,
right,
which we did, and we released in 2016. I had written a song at the time called Stolen Heart. It was in dedication to a very good friend of mine who had lost a son prematurely.
Okay.
And that's just really what I was compelled to do, was to, you know, write that song, because it was like somebody had more or less crept in, you know, stolen her heart, which would anybody would tell you, you know, if you've lost somebody, you know, it does feel as though there's a little party gone forever.
Right.
So that was it. We got together and we did that. And there's some wonderful people on there, Frankie Lane, what have you, from County Kildare. We launched that very sort of quietly. There was no big fanfare, but it's tipping along nicely, as they say.
Good.
We continue to go to County Clare at least once a year.
Great.
To catch up with everybody and sing a song or two, you know.
Now, you mentioned when you were talking about your childhood and growing up that when you something would happen, you would write it down. And so writing has always been part of what you are and what you do. So the idea for the book, now, can I just say that in the promo that I was using for the programme, I said, does anyone know how to trap a starfish? And I said, well, look, don't worry, because we have a lady coming on who'll be able to tell us how to do it. But it's really just a play on the title of the book. It's called How to Trap a Starfish.
That's right.
What is that about?
I know it sounds really, it might sound a little bit, you know, odd, but anybody that writes, and I'm sure you do, you know, you're a past journalist yourself, you know, you feel compelled to do these things. You have to get a story out. You want to talk, you want to communicate. But when this story was buzzing around my head, and this is no offence to anybody, but I was trying to think of a creature that, you know, would symbolise to me, was like a metaphor for a creature that was kind of, well, unique, sort of looked well, quite beautiful, was really misunderstood. You know, a starfish actually isn't a fish, it's an urchin, you know.
Right.
But God bless it, didn't have the brains that it's about. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So that's how it came about. And essentially, the book itself is a reflection on an Irish immigrant's life. Somebody who more or less lost his way and found himself sort of dispossessed financially and emotionally at the end of his life, But he sets out, I mean, it starts with him as a boy in the 1930s. You know, he comes of age in the 1950s. He has massive success in America. I mean, your average story that we mostly hear, these are all the stories that we hear. But actually, there's an awful lot to be told about the forgotten Irish. So there was a huge amount of people, like there was a mass kind of scale movement of Irish people, as you will know, around sort of from 1945, let's say, well into the 60s. And I mean, it still goes on, mostly the UK and into America. And, you know, we always hear about, you know, the success stories, you know, yeah. Kennedy, Henry Ford's father, you know, all these really successful people. But actually, there was a huge amount of immigrants, particularly the likes of single men, going to the UK, going to work in London, and they put their time in. But a lot of them just suddenly sort of found themselves dispossessed by ways of maybe drink, marriage broke up, businesses failed, all sorts of things like that happened. And they became the forgotten Irish that people really don't hear about. And this is a story of just one of those Irish immigrants who did go out, who started, if you know, the early chapters will chronicalise, you know, a gorgeous young boy, very confident because his mother tells him on a daily basis how gorgeous he is and how wonderful he is, as Irish mammies tend to
do. Yeah.
I've done it myself on many occasions. And he did really well. He meets this beautiful debutant from Sandymount. They go out together and they build a fantastic life. I won't give too much away, but basically it reflects upon how this man slowly but surely, through a number of circumstances, becomes dispossessed. And it actually ends, you know, the final days of his life are in a state-run nursing home. He is more or less a ward of the state being taken care of. It also, and I'm sorry to be going on, but what I wanted to do, actually, I wanted to sort of tackle things like the huge community, by the way, that we don't know about at home, that I sort of learned about subsequently, particularly in America, who actually look after. And going back to, you know, the Dublin thing, whether you're a Dub or whether when you're Irish, you're Irish.
That's
and
right.
In America, it's a very strong community of Irish people, whether you're a Dub, whether you're from Roscommon, whether you're from Galway. There's a couple of legendary characters over the years, and I actually dealt with one during the course of the research for this book. In fact, there was a lady by the name of Helen Rafferty, who was my editor in New York, and her father was Peter Glancy, who was an absolute legendary guy from Roscommon. He trained as a firefighter. And he just wound up, looking after, taking care, looking out for Irish community, the Irish community, yeah. People who lost their way. And the world is full of, like, how would you put it, Peter McBarry's people who are out there who are just doing this. A lot of the book, I mean, it's a fictitious book, but the story, I tried to kind of raise subjects like that, that there's things like that going out there, that we do have a bigger community that we realise out there. And it's very strong, it's very powerful. But some of our community fall through the net, you know.
Absolutely. Where can we get our hands on How to Trap a Starfish?
Well, How to Trap a Starfish is being launched on Thursday of this week. You can purchase it online at choicepublishing.ie.
Excellent stuff. And let's go back to the album, Stolen Hearts. Where can we get a copy of that?
CD Baby.
Oh, CD Baby.
By Stolen Hearts.
Am I interviewing online? Austin Powers?
On CD Baby.
CD Baby. Excellent stuff. And just all you have to do is look for Marianne Dwyer, M-A-R-I-E.
Marianne Dwyer, if you put that into the search engine, it will come up.
All right. Well, listen, Marianne, we wish you the very best of luck with the launch of How to Trap a Starfish on Thursday, and indeed continued success with the album. We're going to take a listen to one of the albums now. It's called Wild Blossoms. Tell me about Wild Blossoms.
Oh, Wild Blossoms. Oh, my goodness. It's not written by me, I have to say. Written by a wonderful American lady. It's basically about intense, passionate love. And it's a lady sitting by the banks of a river. And she's saying that she wants to love her partner, her, the man that she so deeply yearns for from afar. She wants to love him. Love him like wild blossoms.
All right.
So enjoy.
It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you, Marianne. Thanks for joining us today. And here is that beautiful song, Wild Blossoms.
12 lovely roses in a blue crystal vase, all arranged so neatly, every petal in its place. I can't
can deny their beauty, but they will never ever move me like those white blossoms by the bend of the river, those white blossoms by the bend. They raise their arms to heaven and bend in gentle rain. They grow in sweet abandon, every petal on this frame. They give themselves completely, toss some caution to the wind. I want to love you like white blossoms by the bend of the river, like white blossoms by the bend.
That is Marianne Dwyer, and a beautiful song that is as well. And thank you to Marianne for taking time to talk to us, and we wish her well with her new book. And I know that the album that you have just been, or a track that you've just heard from the album Stolen Hearts, is doing quite well for her. That was a track that's called Wild Blossoms. Right, that's it. My lot done and dusted for another week. I do hope that you have enjoyed the programme. There was a lot to put in there this week, and look forward to your company again next Monday. Don't forget the change of email address. Jer@tre.radio is the new email address. Thank you to my colleagues here at Talk Radio Europe for the continued support and promotion of Live on Air. Thank you for listening, and thank you as well to our Spanish-Irish cultural consultant. That's Jose Antonio Sierra, and many of you may be receiving this in your email box because Jose Antonio sent it to you. Anyway, nice to have your company. Look after yourselves. Have a great week. Look after each other as well. And I'll see you next Monday. From me, Jer Sweeney. Until then, bye-bye.
Jimmy, Jimmy.
Some crimes are never forgotten. Others are lost to history. Those are the ones we focus on in Crimes of the Centuries, a history meets true crime podcast revisiting murders, trials, and frauds that once dominated headlines. I'm Amber Hunt, your host and a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist. If you like true crime that feels both cinematic and historical, find Crimes of the Centuries wherever you get your podcasts.